cheeky back heel.
With ease, Miguel Aziz's first goal for Portsmouth.
Into the path of Smith-Rowe, into the box. Smith-Rowe scores! A really deserved first goal in Huddersfield Town colours.
What else is there to say other than Flo Balogun? That is it. That is the only important thing to talk about. The kid is on fire. He is on top of the world. Only two players in all of the top five leagues have scored more goals than him this season, and they go by the names of Erling Haaland and Harry Kane. Nobody else has scored more goals in the top five leagues across Europe. I will say that again. Nobody, other than Erling Haaland and Harry Kane, has scored more goals in the top five leagues this season than Flo Balogun. An incredible, incredible week for him. An incredible week for Arsenal fans who, at times, were on edge about a transfer window that some people are overreacting to. I'm not here to talk about it other than to say, aside from maybe getting, yes, if we got Mudryk, if we got Caicedo, those are obviously big money, big name signings. But we got to where we are without players of that caliber as extras in the squad. We brought in players who can do a job and get us over the line if we continue to perform at the level we've been performing at. Yes, if a Saka or a Martinelli goes down for a long period of time, a Mudryk would have been great. Yes, if Partey misses a long period of time, a Caicedo would have been great. I think Jorginho can fill in there and do a job just fine. I think Trossard is going to do an excellent job. I think Kiwior, although he may not do a whole lot the rest of this season, is a fabulous long-term signing and probably replaces the need for a more expensive wage player like Ndika in the long term. I don't know. We shall see. But again, that's not what I'm here to talk about. Flo Balogun on top of the world. Charlie Patino scores in the FA Cup against Premier League competition in his first match against Mick McCarthy. Not a whole lot of other performances to talk about. However, an absolutely bananas last hour of the transfer window where we saw six players leave the academy and go out on loan. Starting with Nathan Butler Oyedehi, who went to Accrington Stanley. Marquinhos, who's not technically a Highlander, but we will cover him because he started in the academy this year. That's where most of us have seen him play for the majority of his time. He's out with Norwich, trying to help them to promotion in the championship. Taylor Foran has gone to Hartlepool United in League Two. And then Keto Taylor-Hart and Billy Vigor have gone to Derby County's under-21 side. / Derby County. We will get into all of that a little bit more. But let's start with the man of the hour, because there's nobody more important. And again, I will say I'm in a little bit of a different place than I usually record from. I am at my buddy's place in San Francisco for the week. He looks out over a major two-way road that has constant traffic, construction, and as you can hear right now, ambulance noises. So I apologize, but I would literally not be able to get this done if I was pausing every time there was a loud noise outside. So hopefully my microphone's doing a good enough job. But again, I keep getting sidetracked. We'll go back to the top with Flo and Balogun and an incredible week. And it's amazing that if you told me after that PSG match where I thought Flo played maybe his most complete game as a senior footballer, that he would go on to have a better appearance a few days later, I would not have believed you. He went up against the likes of Marquinhos, Sergio Ramos, PSG, and all of their talent, and was the best player on the pitch for a considerable amount of the match. Yeah, there were periods before PSG's red card where they controlled possession, Flo didn't get on the ball a lot, but man, did he look lively and dangerous from every touch right from the beginning. He was just relentless. I mean, I have so much to say, and I've said so much on Twitter, but his ability to kind of drift, and it is left side dominant, and it's not dissimilar from Jesus. He's very left side dominant when he's playing as a center forward. He likes to drift out there, he likes to get on the ball out there, and he likes to create from out there and then drift back through the middle and peel off the back shoulder. And he was on Marquinhos's back all day, and it shocked me how much faster he is than Marquinhos. I always think of Marquinhos as a rather pacey center back that can play in a high line. He can step into midfield and do a job there. We've seen him do that with PSG in their best Champions League run in their history about a couple years ago when they lost to Bayern in the final. So we know Marquinhos is an athletic center back, but man, Flo was just relentless. And on top of that, and it's something I discussed on Twitter this week with George, is Balogun has become an excellent presser. He's smart about when he triggers the press. He knows how to close down and move on to the next guy and keep forcing the ball away from the areas of the pitch that the manager wants him to force it away from. Multiple times he forced turnovers, almost goal-creating chances for his teammates from pressing the goalkeeper, from pressing the defenders. And he was just a menace all around. He truly was just fantastic. By the stats in this PSG match, 90 minutes played. I don't even know if I've mentioned yet that he scored the match-tying goal basically on the last kick of the game. I actually don't think I even talked about it because, I mean, that was incredible, and we'll get to that. That one-off moment is the thing that makes Flo so special and takes him to the next level. But to me, what's more interesting to see is all these little things that he has picked up along the way over the last 18 months that have made him such a complete center forward. As a player who, this is his first season playing the entire week in and week out as a center forward, as a lone striker, as a true number nine. And you can just tell every week how much more confident he gets and how much better he gets. Back to the stats, 90 minutes played. He played the entire match, had a goal, 6 shots, 2 of which were on target, 2 were blocked, and 2 were off target. He created almost 1.5 XG, 9 of 15 passing, and 1 of 2 on successful dribbles. And something I noticed early on in this match is Balogun's technical ability is underrated because it's so raw in the way he moves. He doesn't necessarily have the maturity to his body, to his athleticism as he's grown and as he's become stronger and faster to show that technical skill in a classical way, but it's there nonetheless. And in this game, he proved that. Early on, a couple of times, ball's coming into him. He's in the middle of three players, takes a nice touch and finds a man. Takes a nice touch, plays it over one defender and finds a man. He controlled the ball in tight areas. He didn't give up possession at times when Reams were pinned in and needed a center forward who could play like that. He has flicks, controls. He can volley a ball off of a half volley and hit it with pure contact. He's not going to score every time, but a couple of times, half volley on the turn, and he struck it sweetly. If it was on target, it would have been an absolute banger. And as he matures as a player, this is all going to look a lot cleaner, and people are going to realize the technical prowess that Balogun has. But at this age, it can look raw like this. And if you think about it, think about Saka. He was such a raw player when he came in, such a raw physical player, that it was similar. And as he started to add the little bit of tech to his game, it's made him so much more unplayable, but he always had that. And as he grew into his body and got more comfortable as a stockier finger with less immediate burst but more physical prowess, it looked cleaner. And that's a similar thing with Flo. And I also want to give Chris Wilder a lot of credit. And I think it's something that not a lot of people recognize going into that loan spell at Burrow, and not a lot of people recognize throughout the loan spell or after it. But the things that he needed to learn there, he did learn there. And that is what has enabled him to hit the ground running in a top five league. And it's something me and Kev from Next Gen Arsenal have talked about quite a bit, is that in that system, the center forward is so much less about the goal scoring, the kind of thing that Flo is already so prominent at, and so much more about the all-around game. Drifting into the spaces, finding places in between the lines where you can sit, receive, turn, and find a man in front of you. Especially those overlapping center backs. I mean, we've discussed this to no end. But I think Chris Wilder, obviously Will Still is an incredible story, and I'm not going to cover that here, although I do think that somebody needs to be diving deeper into Will Still. I can't believe we haven't gotten a sit-down with him from some outlet, whether it's French or English, to talk about this guy, because it's an incredible story. But Chris Wilder deserves a ton of credit for what Flo Balogun has become. And, you know, it's special to be able to send a player on loan to a manager like that. That was a really special situation, and I'm glad Arsenal and Arteta recognized that and took advantage of it. And
It just made Flo able to do the things that he's doing now with the top flight. And I don't know how else to spell it out. But these are not things that he was doing at the under 21 level. He's always had the goal scoring ability. He's always been an athletic freak and able to, you know, kind of go by any defender, drift left to right wing, find pockets of space behind the center backs. But the other things that made him a complete player and allowed him to actually be more dangerous and wreak more havoc, I credit Chris Wilder a lot for.
But seriously, we've been talking about Balogun already for 10 minutes. This podcast is not supposed to be that long. I'm just so happy to see him thriving. Again, I've mentioned so many times, as an American, I'm praying and hoping that he decides to represent us in the long term. And England, if they're not careful, if they don't call him up in March, they're going to lose him. I think he's shown enough to deserve to be called up to an international team. He's the third leading scorer in the top five leagues, right? So Southgate's got to be careful. Harry Kane's obviously not going anywhere anytime soon, but they sure could use another center forward to have around and to get acclimated to the setup and, you know, a part of the team by 2026. Because, yeah, Harry Kane will probably still be Harry Kane, but 4 years from now with his injury history, it's no guarantee that he's able to do the same things, play the same amount of minutes. You know, 4 years is a long time. So anyway, on to the winner. Unbelievable from Flo. It just was everything he had worked so hard for in that match came to fruition. He received the ball and still had all the pace in the world after running for 90 plus minutes. Split the two defenders, went around the keeper, coolly slotted it home into the top right corner. Finished it off with a Thierry Henry celebration at the corner flag with just the utmost swag. Gets the point for Reims, who are still unbeaten under Will Still. They haven't climbed too far on the table. They're in 11th, but they're not in a relegation fight, and they just are a hard team to break down. And, you know, Flo Balogun has scored 54% of their goals. And you have to credit him and Will Still. I've seen that video of them interacting in training, and they seem to get along really well. I think that's helped Balogun that his manager is so young. But on to really the performance that has broken the internet and made my account blow up. The hat trick against Lorient, in which Reims are down 2-0 early. They come back and win at 4-2 on the back of Flo Balogun's penalty at the end of the first half to get them back in the match. And then his two goals in 3 minutes to secure the hat trick, give them the lead, and eventually have Reims see it out. By the stats, 86 minutes played for Flo. 3 goals, 11 shots, 7 of which are on target, and nearly 3 XG created. 2 of 2 successful dribbles for Balogun, 3 of 5 on ground duels, and 2 of 2 on aerial duels. The numbers are a joke for any player in any match, a ridiculous performance all around. For all of that to happen in one match for one player is literally insane. 11 shots? That's unheard of. 7 on target, almost 3 XG created for one player. I'm pretty sure that's more than Tottenham has created XG-wise in the last 2 months. Flo Balogun had just an outrageous match from start to finish. His first two touches were fantastic awareness to control, play over and around defenders, keep possession. He nearly scored early on off a rebound, but the goalie made himself large. But Balogun was attacking the net the entirety of the match. At the end of the half, Flo stepped up to take a penalty, pounded it straight down the middle. I've seen him score a lot of different ways from the spot this year. First time I've seen him do that. Early in the second half again, Balogun gets on the ball, takes another ridiculous first touch, hitting it up in the air to himself, then backheeling it in the air over a defender to a player making a run through the middle, just oozing confidence with every touch, just absolute swagger on the pitch. And I don't mean to be overusing that word, but I don't know how else to describe the way I'm watching Flo Balogun. I've never seen him look this happy. At least it's been a long time since I've seen him look this happy playing. It feels like he is really loving his football. And there was no reason not to over the next few minutes. As the next goal comes, Balogun receives a somewhat deflected cross. First time volley into the bottom corner with his right foot. 3 minutes later, a long ball comes in from the right half space to Balogun in the box, about 12 yards out in the left half space. Left foot, first time volley against former Arsenal backup goalkeeper Manon. Balogun pounds it into the back of the net. slides into the corner flag celebration. The team mauls him. Everybody is chanting Flo. They want more Flo. Puts the game away for Reams. The comeback complete. The hat trick complete. And there's nothing else to say about it. This was no fluke hat trick. Flo could have easily had 6 goals in this match. He was in so many dangerous areas, receiving balls over and over again over the top because he's finding himself in dangerous areas. Center backs can't seem to mark him no matter who he's playing, whether it's PSG or Lorient. Flo Balogun has really hit his stride. And you know what? I went back and looked because I remember seeing him score a few hat tricks. The man can score a hat trick. He scored a hat trick for the under-18s in 2018 twice. One of those times he had 4 goals and both were against Reading's under-18 side. He opened the 19-20 season with the under-21s and scored a hat-trick in his first match with the under-21s. All penalties, but a hat-trick nonetheless. The first one was a penalty rebound that he scored after a missed penalty. He then had a hat-trick against Brighton's under-23s in 2021. He had a hat-trick against Derby's under-23s in the 21-22 season. He now has 15 total goals this year with Reims. 14 of them are in the league. Of his 15 goals, 2 are headers, 5 are penalties, 6 are right-footed goals, and 2 are left-footed goals. Their next 3 matches are against, and I'm going to butcher these French names, I'm sorry, Auxerre, Toulouse, and Troyes. All below them in the table. One of those is a Coupe de France game. But nonetheless, more goal-scoring opportunities for Flo Balogun. And with his confidence the way it is, I'd be shocked if he doesn't get another couple goals over these 3 games. I genuinely look forward to watching him play almost as much as I look forward to watching Arsenal play. As you all know, a player very close to my heart and a player who really is you know, one of my true passions of this golden generation. There are so many to love, but he has just really transformed himself into an amazing footballer. So much raw ability, but a hard worker, and it's a joy to watch him play. That is enough on Flo Balogun. 15-minute segment of what's usually a 25-minute podcast. Sorry for fawning over him, but who isn't right now? If you're an Arsenal fan, you are fawning over Flo Balogun. On to Charlie Patino, who himself had a lovely week. Played 73 minutes in Blackpool's FA Cup exit to Southampton. They did lose 2-1. Mick McCarthy's first match in charge. But Patino got himself a goal, had a lovely match. 19 of 27 passing. Won 2 of 4 of his ground duels. He was up to speed of the Premier League. I mean, I know Southampton are a, you know, bottom half of the table team, but hey, the physicality, the level of skill on the pitch, it's a difference. Southampton would be a very good championship side, and Charlie Patino is up to it. You know, he stopped a few chances, stepping into passing lanes, reading what Southampton was trying to do, finding teammates ahead of him after, you know, receiving the ball in his own third. The stuff that Charlie Patino always does, he did it against Premier League opposition. He drew a foul in a dangerous area for a free kick for Blackpool. I actually noticed this a little bit different setup, obviously, under Mick McCarthy now. It's kind of a hybrid 3-flat midfield, 2-flat midfield. Charlie's on the left side of it, mostly as a left side of the 3 midfield. That was how they kind of settled in for most of the match. I think that's what they're going to move towards long-term, if I know Mick McCarthy's tactics as much as I do know about them. And I think that midfield 3 allowed Charlie to get a little further forward than how he had been playing recently under Appleton. And it's good to see him find himself in that final third a little bit more, because I think his role long-term is the Granit Xhaka successor. And so we'd like to see him playing in that forward area a little bit more often. He took his goal very well in the second half, made a late run into the box, slotted home with his right foot first time. Not an easy finish by any means. Well taken, far enough away from the goalie, low enough on the ground, hard enough hit that no one was going to stop it. And a good start for him under Mick McCarthy. We were a little worried about what this would mean for him. And, you know, the worry is starting to ease and to let off. So Charlie Patino, we'll continue to see how it works in the championship. A few more training sessions now under Blackpool. It should, you know, help him be more comfortable. And I hope to see him playing as far forward as he was playing in the Southampton match. Staying in the championship, but actually a championship match, Brooke Norton-Cuffey, obviously at Coventry City now. 80 minutes against Huddersfield in a 2-0 win, his first win while playing for Coventry. And interestingly enough, I mean, I'm not going to pretend like I watched a ton of Coventry before this move for Brooke Norton-Cuffey. It seemed they were set up a little bit differently in this match. and Norton Cuffey was playing a more conventional right back role. 14 to 20 passing, he won both of his tackles, 3 of 9 on his ground duels, won his only aerial duel, and 9 recoveries, which is the kind of player we know Brooke Norton Cuffey can be. He's aggressive. He is obviously going to be one of the fastest and most physical players on the pitch, so we like to see those numbers out of him. He did well to stretch the pitch wide. He was not so much in that inverted role as I was talking about earlier. Linked up well with Gyökeres, finding him kind of in the channel in that right half space. And, you know, really just stretching the defense as much as he could. He nearly had an assist with a nice cross that was deflected at the last minute before trying to find Palmer right in front of net, who would have had an easy tap-in. Covered a lot of ground defensively, as I said, and got forward, I think, at the right times. I think in the first match, he got forward a little too often and wasn't covering his bases. I think it was clear that he was making sure to cover his bases in this match. And back to that left-footed passing was very on point. I think if we can find some middle ground between the first two matches and this match, this will be a very successful spell for Brooke. And Coventry fans, they're all over my timeline, are looking forward to seeing this team try and make a push for the promotion playoffs because they think they have the talent. I think they have the talent, and they have a great manager. So I'm enjoying watching them, and I hope to see Joshua Wilson-Esbrand get a little more playing time on the other flank. I've talked about that a little bit on Twitter, but I think that would be an interesting wingbacks with him and Brooke Norton Cuffey. Two very, very talented players who have a lot of similarities and a lot of differences that complement each other quite well. In a surprising early segment, Omar Rekić played 12 whole minutes plus stoppage time for Sparta Rotterdam. However, it didn't end up mattering. He still got recalled after having his most minutes all season and sent to Wigan to join Miguel Aziz and new manager Sean Maloney as they try to escape relegation in the championship. And I'll tell you why. Because in this Sparta-Rotterdam match, both of the center backs got hurt in the 25th minute, and Omar Rekić did not come on until the 78th minute. He was not even fourth choice center back. He did come on and play the last 12 minutes at center back, and he honestly looked quite lively. I was thinking he'd be kind of slumping around, hadn't played a lot, like get caught looking. He was marking well. They were literally not on the ball for 1 second the entire time he was in. I think he touched the ball once. But I was just focusing on him, and he looked lively. I'm hoping he's energetic. I think he's going to step right into this Wigan side, although I've said that before. I'm going to knock on wood, and hopefully I didn't just jinx Omar Rekić again. But I think he should be stepping into this side. Him and Aziz know each other well, have played a lot of matches together at the academy, and they have not played since the 21st, but they will play this weekend, and hope to see them both feature in some way, shape, or form. I'm going to go ahead and, I know, this is another one thing, those things where it's like, I'm going to guess Arsenal know for a fact that Rekić's going to get playing time, and that's why they sent him here. Otherwise, I think they probably would have left him at Sparta Rotterdam, because there's no point in doing this recall and resend thing, but we shall see. Staying with the center backs, Alex Kirk, the surprise center back star of this loan period for Arsenal's academy players, played 90 minutes against Cove Rangers in a 5-0 win for Ayr United. And Alex Kirk has been the key to success for this team. In the league, Alex Kirk has started 14 matches. Ayr have won 9 of those, only lost once, and drawn 4. In the league matches that Kirk did not start, Ayr drew 2, lost 4, and won 2. I don't need to say much more. He's a no-nonsense defender playing in the second division in Scotland. His game is perfectly suited to the way Ayr United are set up to succeed. He's a dual winner. He's a positional demon. He's a smart player. And he's honestly very vocal, and he's a leader out there for such a young kid, and I'm very impressed by him. I think he's a player who could find himself in the championship next year on loan on a serious side. He really reminds me of Daniel Ballard a lot. Daniel Ballard was very impressive at lower leagues and immediately stepped into the championship and did the same thing. I see Alex Kirk doing something similar next year. Staying in Scotland, going up a division, Ryan Alabiosu, who's had a bit of a tough run of it, not getting a lot of minutes, came on and played the final 14 minutes in a 3-0 loss to Ross County. Tried to come on late and influence the match in an attacking form. He's kind of one of the more attacking wingbacks that they use. You know, he did his best. 6 of 7 passing, completed his only long ball, won his only ground duel, won his only aerial duel. Not much doing for Kilmarnock in this match. Not much doing for Kilmarnock in the league at all this year. And fans are clamoring, Kilmarnock fans are clamoring for more Ryan Alabiosu, and they got just that accidentally in their 1-0 win over Dundee when their captain got hurt, and Alabiosu came on, played the final 50 minutes, and had one of his best matches, or at least his best match in the last 2 or 3 months. 15 of 21 passing, he had 4 key passes, completed a cross, won all 3 of his tackles, won 3 out of 4 ground duels, and won 1 of his 2 aerial duels. Kilmarnock kind of switched to a 4 at the back. Alabiosu found himself in a more inverted space, picking the ball up, making forward run. He didn't have to play as strictly as a wingback. And I think he sometimes got isolated trying to stretch the pitch so much when he's become a lot more comfortable stepping inside. And his best actions, I think, in this match were, I'm not going to say, they weren't in the half space necessarily, but they weren't with his heels on the sideline, which is where he's been playing a lot of this year. And he did well to get the ball forward, not necessarily purposely finding a striker, but he knew he had 2 guys up there. He knew that they were at times outnumbering the defenders, and he found them in dangerous areas often. And they should have had a couple of goals off of some of his passes, but they were quite literally firing directly at the Dundee United keeper. So that's how it's going to go, I guess, when you're playing for the team struggling as much as Kilmarnock. They did get the victory. Ryan Alabiosu had his best chance to score in a long time when a ball came rolling out to him on the edge of the box. He struck it, not perfectly, but well enough, hard on target. Defender got a foot to it, bounced up in the air. I mean, somebody should have headed it home. Somehow it didn't happen. It was awkward for the keeper. But a good match for Alabiosu nonetheless. He should find himself back in the starting 11. People want to see it. And we'll keep an eye on him because I had higher hopes for this loan spell than it's been. He started hot and it's been rough, but still got half a season left. And Kilmarnock are going to need him to put in some serious performances if they're going to avoid relegation. Going over to the Netherlands, Nicolai Moeller, having a tough go of it, played 14 minutes in a 3-3 draw with Maastricht. 7-11 passing, completed both of his long balls, and won 1 of 2 aerial duels. Again, Den Bosch are throwing away points from poor play. Moeller receiving very little service, but he's constantly feeding others. And he's only playing short periods of time. And it's hard for a striker to succeed like that. We've talked about it to death. I don't need to keep going over it. When he started 5 games in a row in the middle of the season, in November and December, he found some great form. He had that great match against Ajax's youth side. One of the strongest sides in this division. Hasn't been able to get that form back. He's playing 12 minutes here, or 31 minutes here, 14 minutes here. It's no way for a young striker to be playing. Even with Den Bosch bringing in an old Arsenal front office guy, you would think maybe that would help their situation. Although Den Bosch did bring in Arsenal and USA legend Gedeon Zelalem, who will now play with Nicolai Moeller, which will be fun to watch. He was at NYCFC. When I live in New York, I've seen him play a few times live. It's been fun. So I'll get to watch him again. I, for some reason, everywhere he goes, I go. So, you know, Nicolai Moeller, it's too much. There's too much striking talent right now at Hale End. We know that. It's talked to death as well. Nicolai Moeller is going to unfortunately end up being one expensed at the end of all this. I'd be interested to see where he goes. I don't know that his future will be in England. I think he could find himself at a, you know, second division German team pushing for promotion, an HSV, a Hamburg, or somebody, Armenia Bielefeld, one of those teams, Belgium, if they end up going down. That's where I kind of see his future. And then if he can get a consistent run of form, he's got talents and skills that are unteachable. And that's something that is worth something. So I have high hopes for him. I've always been a huge fan, as everyone here knows. So we're obviously going to keep an eye. Mazita Gungbo for Crawley Town. Played the final 16 minutes against Salford City. Weird position. I don't know exactly what happened here. But he came on kind of as a left midy. They played in a 4-4-2 now. And he was all over the place, kind of running around like a headless chicken in areas that he has no right trying to break down and press players. He looked a little confused. By the numbers, it was an okay match. One is only 2 ground duels. One is only 2 tackles. 7-7 passing. He did pick up a yellow card. He was at no fault for either of the goals that Crawley Town gave up, but bizarre nonetheless. I'd like to see Ogungbo get back into the side in a starting capacity as well. Too many of our players playing 15 minutes here and there. On to our injury players. Tyrese John-Jules getting closer to return. Going to return to trading in a week or two. Hopefully going to be playing by March. get to have an impact on Ipswich Town as they try and push for promotion. I think if they make it into the championship, that Ipswich will, we have a good relationship with them, obviously just sold them Harry Clark. I think they'll come in and try and purchase Tyrese John-Jules permanently. So let's see how that goes. Hopefully he comes back sooner rather than later, a player we all like to watch, and some people who have not given up on him. I'm not giving up on him, just the injuries have been super unlucky. Mika Beerith picking up yet another injury after he had finally come back and started to find some form. Marcelo Flores, 5 straight matches on the bench without playing a singular minute. I will just leave it at this. The future for Marcelo Flores has gotten cloudy at Arsenal. When I know more, I will say more, but let's just leave it there. I think that's a reason why he has stayed in Spain. The Tim Akinola curse continues. 0 minutes against Barnett in a 3-0 loss. The guy plays a few good matches in the starting 11 in which they win and draw higher league opposition and then is on the bench for a bunch of matches. I'm not going to even delve into that. Over to our goalkeepers, which it's starting to heat up and get more exciting. Arthur Okonkwo has his first competitive match coming up February 3rd against the league leaders Red Bull Salzburg, the best team in Austria, in a quarterfinal of the Austria Cup. Should be a load of fun. Hopefully he's the starting goalkeeper. It seems as if he will be. We will find out for sure on Friday, February 3rd. Ovi Ejahiri made his somewhat competitive debut against Koops in a 1-0 loss. It's a preseason tournament, but it's a weird thing where the winner of this preseason tournament gets a bye in the Finnish Cup. Never really heard of something like that, so I'm not sure if it's really considered a competitive match. But Ovi Ejahiri, nonetheless, played the 90 minutes. He's obviously gone there to be their first-team goalkeeper. Tom Smith, we've been wondering why he has not been playing for Bromley. Well, that's because a recall was in the making. He's been loaned out now to Colchester United, stepping up a league from Bromley in the National League into League Two. Made the move there because their first and second choice keepers both needed surgery. Kieran O'Hara has played the last 10 matches at goalkeeper for Colchester. We assume the plan is Tom Smith will take the place and the number one shirt, figuratively, as a number one goalkeeper for Colchester, who play this weekend. So we'll find out if Tom Smith's going to be the goalkeeper right away. Might need a few training sessions, but nonetheless, assume Tom Smith will be playing goalkeeper in some capacity soon for Colchester United in league football, a step up. And on to those players who I mentioned at the top, who made some deadline day moves. Nathan Butler Oyedeji, going to Accrington Stanley, League One. John Coleman is their manager, has been since 2014, won League Two with this team, brought them out of League Two and into League One where they've been, and now they are in an absolute dogfight at the bottom of the table here to stay in League One. They do set up with a two-striker system, a 3-4-1-2, and their need in striking options. They've had a few out to injury. They brought in Nathan, obviously, and also Aaron Presley this window on loan. And Butler Oyedeji did a long interview with BBC Lancashire. And again, I'm sorry if I'm not good with these towns and names. I know people are always correcting me on Twitter. I do my best. And he's a very well-spoken kid. I've only heard him talk a little bit here and there. Obviously, academy players often not interviewed. Sometimes Arsenal do little pieces on them here and there. But what a well-spoken kid with a great head on his shoulders. And I think, I mean, this is obviously talked about, but it's key to understand that this golden generation at Hale End has as much to do with technical ability as it does with mental ability, and how important the mentality of youngsters is in modern football, and the reason why we see so many young players not succeed. Think of Xavier Amechi. Do you remember when Xavier Amechi left for Hamburg? Everyone was losing their mind, like, this kid is supposed to be the next big thing, blah, blah, blah. Have you heard of him since? No, because he has sucked at Hamburg. He's gone out and loaned multiple places and not lasted a season. He didn't have the right mentality. And we're creating mentality monsters here at Hale End. And Nathan Butler Oyedeji is the next one of these. I'm not saying he's a top talent out of Hale End that'll ever make the Arsenal first team. Yes, he's made the bench this year, and that's fantastic. That's most than more will ever do. That is more than most will ever do. But the way this kid spoke really instilled confidence in him for me and made me appreciate him on another level than I really had. He basically opened the interview by saying, you know what, I could have stayed at Arsenal. I'm in really great form at the U21s, but I decided I need to challenge myself and get league football. He spoke about how when they play in the EFL Trophy matches against league football opposition, that
he felt that that was a challenge he was ready for and he wanted to step into, and he's prepared to do it right away. He knows what it's like, and he can tell the physical and tactical differences of playing 90 minutes against grown men and how excited he is for that opportunity. He mentioned that the manager said to him that, yes, they have strikers injured, but they never had a striker with pace, and that's something that Nathan can bring to the team. He spoke about his ability to play both as a winger and as a nine, and when you're in a two-striker system, that's an interesting quality to have because you're not going to be playing as a lone center forward, and Nathan will bring that to the team. Their first match is against Lincoln on the weekend. They're in a fight. I'm excited to watch Nathan play in League One. This is a big, big step up for a player who, going into the season, wasn't even guaranteed that much playing time with the under-21s. But injuries to Kayon Edwards and opportunity and hot form have kept him in the side. And now, look, he's on loan in a League One side all of a sudden. So much can change so quickly. It is key to remember that when we're talking about kids of this age. There's so much that can change so fast. And I think I was going to save this for last, but it's a good segue. Keto Taylor Hart's a great example of that, where going into last season, going into the 21-22 season, he was probably up there with Amari Hutchinson. Them two are probably the biggest names at Hale End outside of Charlie Patino, but the biggest attacking names at Hale End. I guess Flo Balogun. But those two guys were the wingers. Let's call them the two biggest winger talents that we had. Amari Hutchinson obviously left for Chelsea, and his career is going to have a really tough go of it now with what the money they're spending there. His loan move broke down in the last minute. I actually do kind of feel for the kid because, you know, at the end of the day, he's an 18-year-old kid who's being told by his agent to do something. And he's like, oh, this agent represents blah, blah, blah. He must know what he's doing. And you know, it's really hurt his career. I feel for the kid. But back to Keto Taylor Hart, he has basically spent the last 18 months on the fringes of the under-21 side, barely playing, and when he's playing, looking a little bit lost. And now, him and Billy Vigor have been sent to Derby County's under-21s on loan. And this is for a few reasons. Both of them have been kind of on the outskirts of the Arsenal under-21 side. Derby County, because of their difficulties going into administration, not being able to sign players, a lot of their youth plays for their senior team. So their under-21 side are dead last with 0 points. They need bodies to come in and cover and make up numbers. And these two players, both Vigor and Taylor Hart, need minutes. So the loan move makes sense. The idea is hopefully they impress enough to earn minutes with Derby's senior team. Interestingly enough, Arsenal's website makes no mention of the loan being to Derby's under-21 side, while the Derby website says the loan is to the under-21 side. I think there's a chance this is because Derby already have a maximum amount of loan players in their senior side. And so they're kind of skating around rules, which is a little bit sketchy. And so in all likelihood, my guess is they will start with the under-21s and the door will be open for them to make a move up to the league side, to the League One Derby side, or pushing for promotion. So we'll see what happens here. The U21s play Monday, February 6th. The senior team plays Saturday. I think it's very unlikely they'll be involved with the senior team for at least a couple of weeks. But another one where there's a lot of balls in the air here and maybe some really smart, kind of savvy moves by both sides. We'll go to Marquinhos next in the championship, who joins Norwich in a fight for promotion. They sit 7th with 42 points, 3 points between them and 3rd, but also 3 points between them and 12th. So it's all to play for. They have a lot of good attacking options. So obviously, they have Kieran Dowell, they have Josh Sargent, they have Timo Pukki through the middle. Marquinhos is not going to walk into the side and be like, hey, this is my wing to play. He's going to have to prove it week in and week out in training and on the pitch. And that's as much exciting to me as it is the chance for him to play first-team football. Because the opportunity is there for him if he's willing to take it, and that will tell a lot about the kind of kid he is. And I thought it was interesting that he spoke about how useful it was for him to spend the first 6 months at Arsenal when they have so many Brazilians who helped him settle in, helped him understand, you know, the culture and become a part of the team, instead of just sending him directly out on loan. And I think a lot of times we forget that these players, and on this podcast specifically, these kids are 19 years old, 20 years old, even if they're 21, moving from Brazil to London, sometimes without their families. And then imagine just being sent up to Norwich or being sent to Cardiff in Wales, even more strange places than London. Like, you got to understand how to nurture kids, teach them mentality, and get them settled before you send them out into a dogfight. And now this is an exciting opportunity for Marquinhos, who has the opportunity to help a club get promoted, has the opportunity to fight for a place in a pretty strong side, and has the opportunity to impress and show Arsenal, hey, I can be a backup option to Bukayo Saka next year. You don't need to bring in another right winger. So it's a lot of fun here, and that's why I'm going to cover Marquinhos, although I usually don't cover non-Haylanders. I'm going to cover him because I'm excited about this for him. He's shown a lot of promise with the academy. Obviously had that great debut in the Europa League, then kind of fizzled out a little bit, but this is a good opportunity to get back on track. Our last loan announcement was Taylor Foran going to Hartlepool United in League 2, who sit 22nd in an absolute relegation battle to stay in league football, stay in League 2, and avoid the National League. They've conceded 52 goals in 28 matches. Big months ahead. Keith Kearse sets them up with three center backs. He said Foran is the exact kind of defender they need for the rest of the season. He called Foran a leader and a battler, a dual demon. He's coming in to replace Roland Menayase, who's now out injured. He's going to step right into this team. They play Doncaster on the weekend. They have big matches ahead. Taylor Foran, this is a huge opportunity and a surprise that he went out before Zach Aw. But nonetheless, you know what? It honestly makes sense if Hartlepool, let's say Hartlepool phoned up Arsenal in this situation. Taylor Foran makes a lot more sense than Zach Aw. Zach Aw is an amazing player and the biggest center back talent we have, but he's an on-ball defender in a team that's going to control possession, who's going to play out from the back, and Hartlepool are not in that position. Taylor Foran is a monster, a leader, a big, big body who's going to come in there and throw his weight around, and that's what Hartlepool need. Last but not least, Saladin Ulademhand, who we've been keeping you updated with every week, has been recalled officially. We'll go back to Arsenal, try and heal from this nagging injury. It's been an unfortunate spell between him and Hull City. There was a bye clause. There was big hopes that he was going to, you know, make a name for himself in the championship, help Hull have a successful season. None of that has happened. Hopefully he recovers in time to play a few matches with the academy before the year's end, get his confidence back up, and we'll reevaluate in the summer. But that's really all the loan players. You know, I don't usually cover what's going on in the academy all that much because this is really a podcast about the loan players. But since there's been so much movement, I will quickly go over what the first team in the academy should look like for the rest of the season. You're going to have Amario Cozier-Newbery, Benjamin, and Charles Ago Jr. up top. That's going to be your front three until Kayon Edwards returns, when he will likely play as the center forward week in and week out. Kayon Edwards, again, unfortunate injury. He would have likely gone on loan this January instead of Nathan Butler and Odi Udeji, who would have been taking the opportunity with Kayon Edwards gone to get his place into the U21 team. Obviously, things change. The midfield will look something like Henry Francis and Wanneri sitting ahead of Matt Smith as the lone six. You obviously have the likes of Miles Lewis-Skelly. You have Bandera. You have Catalan Sirigon, Matthias Roberts. So who can fill in those, you know, dual eight positions? And then you have Bradley Ibrahim, who's, I haven't spoken about a lot on this podcast, but people I talk to a lot know he's one of my favorite and most underrated youngsters at the academy right now. He's a guy who I could see coming in as a lone six to Arsenal in three-ish years and being a serious player in that position. I like his physical attributes a lot. He's progressed really, really well. And if Matt Smith were to have left, he would have stepped right in there. At the back, your back four is going to be pretty consistent. It's going to be Lino Sousa. It's going to be Monlouis. It's going to be Zach Aw. It's going to be Ruel Walters. Walters and Sousa, obviously, right back and left back. Monlouis and Aw, a perfect center back pairing. You have some good depth there as well. You got Rosiak and Nichols, who can fill in at right back. You have Robinson, who can kind of fill in anywhere across the back line. You have Comino, who can fill in for Sousa at left back. Lewis-Skelly has played a little bit there. And then you have Jeffcott and Aldini Calcuri, who can fill in for Monlouis and Aw in the center back positions as well. Your goalie is going to likely be Hubert Gratschik for most of it, with Hilson, who just picked up an injury, playing some goalie, as well as Noah Cooper, who made his debut this past weekend for this under-21 side. Up top, you got the likes of Seb Ferdinand, who can fill in on the wings, George Lewis and Joel Idaho, and Daniel Yetunde, who made his debut for the under-21s. You have some unfortunate injuries.
Kayon Edwards, I mentioned. James Sweet, who has really been coming along nicely as a right back and kind of reminds me of Ben White in his ability to play in that inverted right back role. Very creative player, very technically sound player. Has to improve his defensive qualities, and that's why he was moved there from midfield. Unfortunate injury. Hope to see him back at some point this year. Already mentioned Salah Eddine Ulaadim Hand, but then you have Henry Timmy Davies, a forward who's been hurt, and Elian Kazeda Thorne, who had been coming along really well as a left back. And if healthy for the start of next year, will probably be your starting left back in the under-21s with Lino Sousa either joining the first team or more likely going out on loan. But that's everything I've got for you this week. An incredibly packed week. Obviously, Flo Balogun in the highlight, but so many new loans, so much to cover. Thank you all for interacting with me on Twitter, and I'm excited to get back to you next week to discuss all these new players on loan and see how our stars are getting along.